Good morning. My name is Leslie, and I will be your conference operator for today. Participation in this conference call is strictly limited to invited participants. This call is exclusively for financial analysts and investors. If you are not an invited guest, please disconnect at this time. I would like to welcome you to the conference call on report on economic activity, public finances, and public debt as of the fourth quarter of 2023. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a questions and answers session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 8 again. I will now introduce you to the speakers. Rodrigo Mariscal Paredes, Head of the Economic Planning Unit at the Ministry of Finance, and Maria del Carmen Bonilla, Head of Public Credit and the International Affairs Unit at the Ministry of Finance, to proceed with their remarks. Please go ahead.
Hello and good morning to everyone. I'm Rodrigo, the Head of Economic Planning, and with me is my colleague Maria Carmen Bonilla. So we will proceed as usual. We will make some remarks on the last quarter of 2023, and in particular the economic activity and some public finances and debt management. So let me just start by saying that we started 2023 a year ago or more than with many analysts' view of the recession was very likely to happen, with inflation at the highest level in decades and still the most of the central banks in the world embarking on one of the toughest monetary tightening process in years. However, economic activity has proven to be resilient, while the inflation outlook has improved substantially. Just to give you some numbers, at the beginning of the year, the IMF expect a growth of world GDP of 2.7%, while we probably gonna see 3.1%. The US economy, substantial growth coming from 0.3 to 2.5. And also the Mexican economy growing at 3.1%, coming from 0.9%. So practically every country improved, with the caveat of the Eurozone that they have more of a lower outlook that many people were expecting. Now, most of the world's economy are currently undergoing a deflationary process. These processes have been slower than in the past due to a combination of supply shocks. So we are still not out of the woods, but it's something of an improvement. Just to give you one of the numbers or data that we have collected, for example, the U.S. inflationary usually takes 14 months on average after a peak to return to its target. Currently, we have been running close to 19 months since the peak, and inflation still remains 1.4 percentage points above target. For Mexico, the inflation usually takes 22 months on average, again, after the peak to return to the target, and currently we have running for 15 months since the peak, and inflation remains 1.6 percentage points above target. Interest rates in most countries seems to have peaked and even decreased in some emerging economies, in nominal terms, of course. We have even seen some rate cuts, but mainly in emerging economies. Just to give you some numbers, the number of central banks raising rates in the fourth quarter of 2023 was 6 versus a year from then of 37 central banks. Now the number of central banks that cut rates in the fourth quarter of 2023 were 13 versus 1 central bank cutting rates a year from that point. Now 11 out of that 13 were in emerging market economies. Now, however, real rates remain quite high. The U.S. Nominal rate flat in July of 2022, but the real ex-ante rate increased 50 or so basis points since then, currently up to 2.3%, while the Mexican rate flattened in March of 2023, but the real ex-ante rate has increased by 80 or more basis points up to 7% in real ex-ante terms. The world economy began 2023 with some less pessimistic views. Even so, a slowdown compared to 2023 is expected, and challenges in the inflationary outlook still persist. The structural risk in to the inflationary outlook, for example, are coming from geopolitical tensions and challenges associated with climate change and adding new pressures for supply chains, commodity prices, global trade, and inflationary outlook. So let me just comment on some of the things that we are looking and some of the things that we are mostly worried about. So commodity prices have become more volatile after the pandemic. We think that this is a major risk for the inflationary outlook, both from the global perspective and from Mexico's perspective. All commodities have increased its volatility, practically every single component of the commodity price indices, for example, food, energy, and oil, have increased substantially from the volatility in previous years. Now, we add that to some conflict that we have seen in the Red Sea and the Panama Canal management problems. Basically, it has to do with geopolitical conflicts and climate issues. Now, for the cargo ship, for example, the Suez Canal has decreased the amount of crossing ships by 43%, while the Panama Canal has decreased by 41%. That we think it's something that it's going to be an important thing that we have to watch. Now, as of now, that we estimate that that effect could have an impact to world GDP of 0.3 percentage points. 0.3% of lower growth. So that's still manageable. But if the effect lasts through the end of the year, the effect could be as high as 0.9%. Now, for what we have estimated, Mexico, these effects or these shocks are not significant, but that's like a direct effect. We haven't estimated what could be the second order effects of that disruption, both in terms of the economic activity or in the inflationary outlook, but it's something that we really need to keep an eye on. Now, let's talk a little bit about trade fragmentation, which is also an important effect and something that we are concerned. So we have seen some world, this is something also related to what we think is going to be a deceleration of the world economy. And basically what we are looking at is the world imports volume, which as of November of 2023 has a year-to-date of lower 3.2% relative to the same period of 2022. So this is the worst decrease in volumes of trade since 2008. The advanced economies, the same effect, are below 4.4%. Again, this is the worst since 2008. While the emerging economy is not so low, it's 0.7%, but you need to take into account that some of this effect has to do with China and some rebalancing of the world trade. So basically, if you exclude China from this number, the imports have decreased of something of 1.7%, while China has actually increased. And something that we need to take into account is that China is getting more trade with certain countries, especially with Russia, with Australia and Brazil. So it seems that there's like a change in the world trade pattern that probably is going to have an impact on the economy, and the aggregates won't tell you the story unless you start digging into the weeds. Something that we also see as a risk or an opportunity, depending, but definitely is going to create some volatility around the world, is that more than 60 countries in the world will have elections. That's 50% of the world's population. And in particular, we're having an election in the U.S. and Mexico. And normally, the U.S. and election create some volatility related to the exchange rate. We estimate that this volatility could increase as much as 10% relative to other years, again, on average. Now, let me switch to and do some remarks on Mexican economy. So let me start by saying that the Mexican economy outperformed its historical average and the consensus that started in January, and we have a very good growth towards the end of the year, with a certain slowdown observed in some sectors, basically pressured by lower foreign demand and pressured by supply side factors. The GDP estimate, we have a 2.4% year-to-year and a 0.1% on a quarter-on-quarter. So that means that the economy has been growing for 9 consecutive quarters. So that's a positive thing, but when we look at the index of economic activity, we have seen 3 months consecutively with decreases in growth. Particularly, we estimate that implicit economic activity index for December had a contraction of 0.4%. It's not high, but still at least shows some sort of deceleration relative to what we have in the first semester of 2023. For 2024, this lower growth put the Mexican economy in a lower base, in a higher base in 2023, so that we experienced in 2022. So that means that the carryover is lower than we have the year before. So in order to reach some growth, the same growth that we have this year is going to be tougher, because that means that the economy would have to perform very well in 2024 in order to reach a high level or the same amount of growth that we experienced during the last year. For the domestic demand, we still see very strong private consumption, but in particular, investment has been growing outstanding. There is a lot of demand coming from that part, even more so than any other component in the Mexican GDP. So practically, let me give you some remarks relative to the external sector. So if you see the external sector, for example, the growth on export is high. It's not that high as other components of the demand, while the imports are actually contracting in 2023, what we think. So basically, all the support for growth so far, and what we probably going to see when the data are going to be published in for 2023, is a investment component driving most of the growth. For the employment part, we also have seen historical good results in terms of the performance. The participation for the labor force participation has been growing and is currently at its peak at 60.4%. This is the highest since 2012, while employment it's at very low relative to historical levels at 2.8%. So this is the lowest unemployment rate that we have seen recorded since we are measuring in the way that we measured in 2005. The high employment creation in the private sector, and in particularly in the formal market, and many of the, although this is happening, we think that there's still some room in some sectors that they haven't reached its pre-pandemic levels, in particularly construction. Although it's performing quite good, there's still some gap there, as well as restaurants and some agricultural sectors. However, we have some other sectors like manufacturing that they are growing, or the employment is quite above the pre-pandemic levels, and the trend that will happen had the pandemic not been observed. So what I'm saying is that we see that the economy has two sort of speed relative to the economy. There's one speed that is growing quite high related to the nearshoring and some things that are happening in the manufacturing sector. the public investment is also pushing, but there are some other sectors in the economy that are not performing quite good. And for those sectors, we see this is more coming from the demand part. Now, in terms of the actual GDP relative to the trend, you can see that also as well. So just to give you some example, if you measure the trend that that we have before the pandemic, starting from 2009 to 2019, practically Mexico is 6 percentage points below that pre-pandemic trend, while, as you probably know, the U.S. is very close or a little bit above that pandemic. Now, the consumption is even more, because most of the growth that we have seen in 2023 and 2022 is coming from the investment. So the consumption is 7% below this trend, but the investment is very close to this pre-pandemic trend. Let me just go on and talk about some supply and potential risk to the Mexican economy. So there are some shocks that we have seen and are already in the economy, as I was telling you. And this is something that we will see, and we think that this is going to be a potential risk for 2023. So there's the climate change challenges. Climate change, both from the price formation and the economic activity, are mainly the primary risk for the Mexican economy are coming from those shocks. On average, we have seen some droughts in the Mexican economy. In 2023, the percentage of land affected by droughts is close to 76%. So this is the highest since the records begin in 2002. In the severe drought, it's at its highest record. So I think that this is going to be an important shock that is going to be affecting the Mexican economy, both in terms of the economic outlook and the inflation. The droughts have affected substantial regions in Mexico that we have not seen hit so hard in 2022. So that also creates some problems with the water and other industries. So basically the south, the center, and the center-west regions are mostly affected. A great number of products have been affected. Droughts have medium-term effect, of course, due to agricultural cycles. So we estimate that the intensification of droughts at the end of 2022 will keep affecting 2024, even if we have, if we see some improvement in 2024, because of the agricultural cycles, this is going to be affecting in 2024 in particular. Most of the products based on the regions and the crops that we know that they have been affected is basically corn, onions, tomatoes, and other products that are very important for the Mexican consumption basket. This is something close to 2%. It weighs close to 2 percentage points in the CPI. So those items, whenever they affected, and again, it depends on how they affected and what the shock is coming from, but it could potentially affect an important thing. Something that we've been telling for many years is that one of the biggest concerns that Mexico should have in line is the climate change issues. We've been pushing a green agenda with the financing and other parts, but we really think that there's a lot to be done. Particularly, we have not seen so much push from other international organizations. They are more concerned about the current stance and the tightening of monetary policy and the fiscal, but we really think that it's something that we need to put into the fiscal rules and start thinking about really these things, because at the end, the important shocks that will manifest in the medium term are not so much what happened in the short term, so the policy decisions relative to the monetary or the fiscal, but the long-term things that we don't do at the time. But I think that we have not been able to convince enough people to talk about this. Now, the tensions at the merchandise borders is also a concern that we are looking at. You probably see the things that happen in the press relative to the closing of the border. The foreign sector faces some challenges that remain as potential risks, such as the closure of the merchandise border in Texas. Now, this is going to be an important shock for Mexico, could be, but we think that this is going to be more damaging to the U.S. because 70% of the exports that Mexico sends to the U.S. enters through Texas. So even if you just think that this is going to be a Texas effect, we think that this could be a potential for more disruption. This includes, so the crossing of Texas includes imports from other states that enter through Texas. So it could affect trade in other regions of the U.S., not only Texas. So just to give you some numbers, the crossing affect by December closures relative to U.S. imports from Mexico from Eagle Pass was 50.4% and El Paso 1.5%. So some immigration policies in Texas have also involved some reinforcement of transportation cargo checks, which generally generate some delays. So this is something that we also are concerned and could have an impact both in U.S. economy and Mexican economy. We also have this thing with the bottlenecks in transportation and merchandise, both in the U.S. and Mexico. There are some labor shortages and cargo and trucks that transport things within Mexico and crossing the border. After the pandemic, we have some imbalances in the labor market with truck drivers and several countries around the world, but Mexico and the U.S. are included. So this is something of also a potential threat to the economy and also to the prices of Mexico. Now, let me switch and finish with the public finances comments on the end of the year. We published the last figures yesterday, so let me give you some remarks and we probably have some question from you. So public finances in 2022 were subject to an unusual combination, I would say, of shocks reflecting their major impact on government's revenue from exchange rate and appreciation and oil prices. However, we have a very good performance in other revenues and some prudent spending that kept imbalances in line with our fiscal target, not what we presented in the package, because as we discussed when we presented the package of 2024, we were doing some adjustment and passing some of the expenditure to 2024. So the unusual combination of falling prices and currency appreciation, we managed to adjust for that. Just to give you some numbers, the price approved in the package was $68.7 per barrel, and we observed $71 per barrel on average. It was below the approved, but most of the shock happened in the first half of 2023. So although the average are not that different, that has an important effect during the fiscal exercise. We practically have 6 months of on the shock. And the nominal exchange rate appreciation also have an impact of the revenues in peso terms, because that's how we value them. So that appreciation of more than 10%, even something close to 15% appreciation of the exchange rate, have an impact. Just to give you some numbers, if you would translate the oil prices in pesos that were approved, we were approved 1,500 pesos per barrel, and we have observed 1,200 pesos per barrel. So that's close to 150 or more pesos per barrel that we estimate. And we've been very close to the old platform, but that is a significant effect within the public finances. So at the end, oil revenues decreased by 31% in real terms. So that means that we have something close of 240 billion pesos below the program, and we have to adjust that in the most way. So the falling oil prices made possible to reduce the fuel excise subsidies. So this is something of a positive, because as you probably know, the excise tax on fuels, it works as a buffer, was a hedging of the oil revenues. When it goes up, the excise tax tend to go down and vice versa. Now, in terms of the tax revenues, we have a very good performance So if we exclude the fuel excise tax, which is something most closely related to the economic activity, the performance was well and even show a higher growth elasticity relative to the economy. Tax revenues overall grew 12.4% in real terms, and it reached a high level of GDP. But when we do the subtract the excise tax revenues, we saw a 4.5% of real growth. So this is something very good, and it was mostly driven by the income tax performance, which grew by 4.6% in real terms. We have reached, in terms of the level of GDP, the highest level, both from the income tax and the VAT. So this is as well a positive thing for the Mexican economy, because that means that the base for 2023 was higher than we anticipated, and that create a base effect for the revenues of 2024 that is going to be positive. Now, on the expenditure side, we were able to make the necessary adjustment to absorb this shortfall in revenues, while at some time increasing in real terms expenditure in some of the greatest or the most important expenditure items that impact the economy, in particularly expenditure relative to the social programs, to the investment in infrastructure. So I'm not going to comment so much in terms of the expenditure, and if you have any questions, we are happy to provide explanations. Now, since I'm going to pass over to Mari Carmen, I want to emphasize that in terms of the financial cost, the public management unit did a great job for reducing the financial cost. Just to give you some numbers, and this is sort of an opening for Mari Carmen, is that if you see the program, the financial costs were lower by 34 billion pesos. So if you do the just by doing the elasticities, the increase in interest rate implied by the difference that we set in the budget were estimated to be 65 billion pesos. So that means that the credit unit in had a savings of close to 100 billion pesos. So that's a very important thing. And 20% of that could be explained by the peso appreciation. That's an important savings. Just to finish, let me also say something about the public balances, which is something important and probably you will have more questions about. Now, as I was mentioning, all the financial and the public balances were closing accordingly or very close to what we estimate in the program. The public balances were practically close. The only one that was a little bit higher was the PSVRs, and most of the difference was explained by the inflationary component of the debt. But we were able to finish the debt with a 46.8%, at least 2 percentage points below what was already approved. And probably, you know, and we will discuss in that with you, that would create a 2 percentage points space for this year. And that's a very positive thing, because with the deficit that we are going to be expanding, we estimate that we are practically going to use that space, and we are going to be closing the administration at 48.8 or something very close to that number. So let me just stop here and then pass the microphone to Mari Carmen. Thank you.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Good morning, everyone. I will share the main results of debt management during the fourth quarter of 2023. I would like to start reassessing that the main objective of the federal government is to maintain public debt in a sustainable downward path as percentage of GDP, as Rodrigo just mentioned previously, having a responsible, transparent, and efficient debt management. As you know, we are continuously engaging in strategies to improve the maturity profile, reduce the refinancing and cost risk, and seek some efficient opportunities on transactions. In this regard, I would summarize the main actions contained in the report. And I'm going to try to be very quickly on these ones. On October 5th, in the domestic market, we refinanced about 104 billion pesos of CETES, bondes, M-bonos, and UDI-bonos with maturities between 2024 and 2026 that we repurchased, and a total amount of 97 billion pesos of bondes EFE and UDI-bonos were exchanged with maturities between 2026 and 2031. On October 23, we did another refinancing transaction. This was mainly exchange of government securities as well. And we bought back maturities from M-bonos and UDI-bonos between 2024 and 2038 for a total amount of around 35 billion pesos. And at the same time, we issued 37 billion pesos on different type of instruments with maturities between 2025 and 2053. This includes CETES, M-bonos, and UDI-bonos. What we are looking to do here is to smoothen out the maturity profile of the federal government. As you know, during 2023 and this 2024, there was a very long outstanding issuance coming from the past 10 or 15 years that hasn't been tackled. And that's why we have been so active in the market, because the objective is try to smoothen out the profile going forward. On October 25th, then we have this commitment, as Rodrigo was mentioning, regarding ESG and the importance of climate change, not only to the into the balance sheet, but also to the debt strategy. And in that sense, I would like to tell you that we are including new categories related to water and forestry. They are still small compared to the overall budget we have on ESG, but we think it's a good way to start increasing these categories. On October 25th, we issued three tranches of bondes G, 2 year, 3 year, and 5 years. To provide liquidity to this curve and keep the benchmarks. In total, 15 billion pesos were issued. This transaction was oversubscribed by 4 times the issued amount, and 33 institutional investors participated. I would like to highlight that as a result of this transaction, we as a Ministry of Finance, compromises of giving an account of the budgetary expenditure amount directed to sustainable projects, which reflects the Government of Mexico commitment with sustainability and responsible investment. These transactions are in compliance with the ceilings approved by the Mexican Congress for fiscal year 2023. Despite being outside of the reporting period and just for transparency purposes and accountability, I just would like to mention that on January 17, we did the first exchange of the year, but a total amount of 110 billion pesos. And this transaction involves a buyback of CETES and bondes F maturing in 2024. And we push forward, as I mentioned, consistent with the strategy, part of them into the coming years. Regarding foreign debt, we didn't make any bond issuances in international markets, but as well, for transparency, I would like to mention that on January 2nd, we executed the first issuance of the year in external markets with an amount of $7.5 billion, aligned with the annual borrowing plan that we released during December last year. This transaction includes 3 tranches, 5-year, 12-year, and 30-year. This deal improved the liquidity and efficiency of the dollar bonds and, of course, allow us to have space to raise capital for the coming months and front-load some of the needs we have for this year. Also on January 18, a new sustainable bond was issued for a total amount of 2 billion euros. This deal allowed the putting a new reference into the sustainable yield curve in this market. Right now we have three tenors, so we feel pretty much comfortable of potential issuers could use this as a benchmark with better market references. Regarding liability management transactions, the main highlight is that as of the fourth quarter of 2023, we were able to refinance around 753 billion pesos of internal debt. This is really important because it has helped us not only to contain the increase on the financial cost, but also trying to have a better profile on maturities. And I would like to say as well that during the entire administration, a total of $15 billion of external debt has been as well refinanced, as well as 2.2 trillion pesos of local debt. Regarding investors' base, debt policy has been looking to broaden the investors' base. We have approached new investors coming from different geographies, and not only on external markets, but we have seen additional interest in the local market. And what we would like to push forward is keep on diversifying this structure. Regarding debt levels, in the fourth quarter of 2023, the PSBR stood at 46.8 of GDP. The domestic debt represented 35.6 of GDP and the external debt 11.2. Regarding public sector's net debt, that includes the net debt of the federal government plus the state-owned enterprises and development banks, this figure was 46.8 of GDP, and at the end of the fourth quarter of 23, domestic debt represented 35.4 of GDP and external debt 11.4 of GDP. Lastly, the federal government's net debt was 40% of GDP at the end of this quarter. The domestic component of this net debt represented 33.7% of GDP and the external component only 6.3% of GDP. Regarding risk metrics, I just would like to highlight that currency risk remained low, with only 15.8% of the federal government's net debt being denominated in foreign currency and 84.2% denominated in domestic currency. Additionally, refinancing risks stand at a low level since the average maturity of foreign market debt is around 19.8 years and the average maturity of domestic debt market debt is 8 years, which shows an upward path since it stood at 7.8 years in 2022. Lastly, interest rate risk is also limited given that 76.5% of domestic market debt is in long-term and fixed nominal rates, while we have kept the 100% of the external market debt as fixed rate. Thank you very much for your attention, and we now proceed to the Q&A.